Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Scott Stemmen Podcast. I hope you are having a wonderful afternoon today. It is beautiful here in Ohio, warm, the weather that I was hoping for when it was last warm and beautiful like a couple weeks ago before it got all cold again. So today we're going to be talking about church junk, and more specifically, how many of you have ever been to a church, or maybe you notice your own church and you notice that there's like a room or an area that is just so junky, and you're just like, I don't know why this room is so junky. So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. So joining me today is Micah Current. Micah, how are you doing today?
I'm good. You're right about that weather. It's crazy how all of a sudden it's like, we didn't have much of a winter this year in Ohio, which I'm not complaining about, but like we've had that cold, not cold, but like, I don't know, fall feel with rain and dampness and kind of, it's rained a lot this year. And so over the weekend, it finally broke to, you know, I think yesterday we got into the 80s and the day before that was like 70 something. The day before that was in the 70s. So like, and I think this week is looking up to be the same. So, yeah, another day, can't complain. Always up for talking about some church junk though.
Oh boy. Yeah. Goodness. And before we dive into our church junk, and even before we dive into our stories gone wild, you know, Micah, sometimes I'm just so busy, I really don't get a chance to put a preview out there for the upcoming episode of the podcast. And last week I did. I had a little bit of time to kind of put a preview saying, hey, we're going to be talking about kind of the results from the survey about the general director position. And I put all that stuff and kind of hear our thoughts. And man, we got a couple new subscribers on our YouTube page after that went out. And not only that, but somebody who listens to us regularly mentioned, oh man, I can't wait to listen to this episode. And then she also kind of proceeded to saying that she also kind of feels very skeptical about the direction the Church of God is going, and kind of hitting some of our same thoughts. And this was not a church leader. This is not a missionary. This is just somebody who is a member of a Church of God congregation who's been in part of the Church of God for years. And even is like, hey,
you want to hear something funny about that in regards to that?
Yes.
I won't mention their name, but Scott, what church do you work for now? What kind of church do you work for now?
A UMC.
Right. So last week, somebody I was on the phone with, Church of God related, they were like, I don't know why we just don't like dissolve the Church of God and pair up with the Methodist or pair up with the Nazarene or something, because at least they have somewhat of a sense of kind of an organization, and they actually stick to what they're doing. I just thought it was funny. Like, they're just tired of the Church of God games too.
Well, it was actually funny because, I'll just jump right into my story's gone wild because this is pretty great. So so in the Methodist Church, they do what's called confirmation, which basically kind of how they do it is in the Wesleyan.
You're teaching
church,
a class on that?
I've been teaching a whole class on that from January, just going through the different things of what we believe, all this stuff, except for when it came to like Methodist theology and Methodist history. I didn't teach that class. I taught something else. But one of the things I thought was pretty interesting was that in Methodists, they baptize babies. They kind of sprinkle. So they'll baptize babies. And kind of the whole point of that is just to kind of institute them into the church. And then it's the parents' job and the church's job to really cultivate this child's faith as they're a member of the church, or as they're a part of this church. And then confirmation is when they kind of say, you know, I'm now going to take hold of my faith. I believe in the faith that I was baptized in. So, you know, the values of the United Methodist Church and all that. So they kind of have like a more traditional view on membership versus Church of God, where we believe that, well, if you believe in Jesus, you're a member of the church. We don't have to go through all these ceremonies and rites to do that. So anyway, like my thing is, because I'm not a UMC minister, I usually can't do any of the sacraments. I can't baptize. I can't do communion. I can't do any of those things. So I'm kind of there, but I don't really do anything. Well, so my pastor's been working on the services and everything else. And then when it comes to baptism, so I'm sitting there and I'm sitting right next to my pastor. She leans over to me and she's very upset. Like, she's like, "I'm so sorry. I didn't really talk to you or have time to have you be a part of this baptism and stuff. Because plus, I don't know what your liturgy is for baptism within the Church of God." And I just kind of said, "It's okay. I'll just follow your lead." So she just wanted me to, like, when we lay our hands on the person gets baptized, to lay our hands on them and just kind of say this prayer. So I was just kind of following her lead the whole time. But then I kind of thought about it. I go, well, you know, there's really not a liturgy for the Church of God, because the way we view baptism is completely different than the UMC. So even if you ask me what the liturgy of the Church of God is, I'm like, well, basically, if they, at least what I was told is, like, you know, we don't see baptism as a way of salvation. It's our acceptance of Jesus Christ. And I mean, I know some people who accept Jesus as their Lord and Savior and have never been baptized. And I know some people who, right when they commit their lives to Christ, then they get baptized immediately afterwards. And it's kind of they do everything all together. And some, they may accept the Lord Jesus Christ, and then maybe sometime later they may feel the Holy Spirit lead them to get baptized, and they do it that way. So I just thought that was very interesting how how that all played out, and just, you know, different traditions, especially when you have a person who is not part of a denomination's view and not ordained in that denomination, how you're still a pastor and they still recognize you as a pastor, but you don't really necessarily understand or know the rites and rituals of the thing that you're supposed to be doing.
I have never met your pastor, but I just feel like she's such a wonderful person.
Maybe I'll try to get her on the show when she's not busy.
Well, what I mean by that is, like, she's just, she recognizes that you have experience in, like, another church, and you're ordained through another church, and you've went to seminary, you know, and you're working on your doctrine. She's sensitive to the fact that you may not know certain things in respect to the Methodist stuff, which is fine. But back to my point about the whole, you know, the Church of God thing, like, wow, like, it just seems like there's so much more open-mindedness.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think.
And I don't mean that by, like, political means or anything like that. What I mean is that, like, people are open to ideas of theology and open to ideas of different ways to do things in respect to ordinances like baptism, communion, et cetera. And if you're, you know, you weren't raised in that tradition, then okay, that's okay. That's fine. But at least you know about it. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing which makes the Church of God, which kind of goes back to what we've been talking about and what Jeanette's talked about, is just the sense of who we are. Because even when I would go and I would candidate at different churches, and I would be talking about the Church of God theology and Church of God values and all that stuff, and sometimes it seemed like what I was talking about almost seemed heretical to the church I was trying to apply to, because some of the stuff I was saying is like, well, no, like because they were very much a old school Church of God, or they're kind of like, well, we take the Church of God name, but really we don't really follow any of the Church of God theology or values. So we're kind of it by name, but not necessarily by praxis. So I don't know. It's I think that's kind of been an issue too. And even talked with one of my buddies out in the Midwest, he kind of even mentioned how sometimes, you know, at least within his state, it's like, if you wanted to become a pastor in the Church of God, all you had to do is just show up and just say, "I like to be a pastor." And they're like, okay. Or they want your church to be affiliated with Church of God. And it's like, okay. Because, you know, there's only like maybe, I think from what he told me, is there's like 28 churches in this entire region. And it's like it's one of the few Church of Gods that's not actually have a ministry as a state. It's like a regional.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like five states. And within the five states, there's maybe like 28. I think he even said that when he was talking to someone, like maybe only out of the 28, 11 of them are functional or would be considered healthy. And of course, one of those churches is the church he pastors. And he's like, well, I got to tell you, I don't know what your definition of healthy is, but there it goes. So I don't know. It's one of those things where the Church of God really needs to kind of bunker down and get back to who we are and what we believe. And I know we kind of did that with the Justice and Equity Task Force. What do we believe about race? What do we believe about women in ministry? And even though we got those findings from them, it's like, okay, and they're kind of putting some of that stuff into practice. But I think that's more topical. Like, I think that's like a branch, and we really need to investigate the roots and make sure our roots are not rotting out. Because it doesn't matter how healthy our branches look, if our roots are rotting out, the tree's going to fall down and go boom.
We can hang up the call now.
Well, we have to talk about church junk, but more
I
physical
know.
junk
It's
instead
just,
of.
I just feel like it's super upsetting to me. And it's just so many churches are unhealthy and they don't want to, they don't want to get better, or they're too stuck in their ways and it's just going to be to their detriment. And I would say that as the, for the Church of God across the board, like it's just, I've been sitting in church the last couple of weeks and I'm like, not the church I'm sitting at, but just thinking about the church across the board. And it's like, we're just sitting there. Like we're doing the same stuff over and over again. Like what are we doing in respect to outreach, in respect to, advancing the kingdom of God and going out and making disciples. I've always been fascinated by that conversation of like, Jesus tells us to go out and make disciples, and we sit in a church building on Sunday morning and expect people to come in. It's just kind of like, it's backwards. It's just backwards, if you ask me. Not saying I have anything against formal worship or, community or anything like that, or like corporate gatherings, but like, it's just, not everybody's going to get saved at an altar. I think you said that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I kind of shared my story gone wild. What's yours, Micah?
At church yesterday,
Oh.
there was some junk. No, I'm kidding. We'll talk about that later. The person stood up to do announcements. And they were going through the announcements and they're like, we got VBS coming up and we got this coming up and we got church work day coming up. And they got to this this men's event, like an all men's event. And the title of it, just Alicia and I laughed so hard. We're sitting in the back of the church. Are you ready for this? Gods and guns. Or God and guns. But not just God and guns. God and guns part two. They have one last year.
Part two.
Yes.
And okay, so what's the topic about God and guns? Like, is it
I don't know. It was
God
pretty
supports? Because I know there's
vague.
a well, because there's a there's actually a group, our women's group here is doing a series on, I wouldn't necessarily call it gods and guns, but they're basically looking at the verse where we're turning like spears into plowsheds. So it's kind of looking at like, kind of weapon laws or gun laws, and kind of what's the Christian response to all that. So, they're kind of talking a little bit about, when is there a time for war? When is there a time of peace? And kind of, so they're kind of looking at a very biblical view of war and peace and how that affects our modern day with our gun laws and everything else. So for me, it's like, okay, that seems good, but God and guns,
Part two.
part two, with no explanation of what it is. I'm
I think it's
like,
just like a men. I think it's a men's thing.
is it
Like
like,
it's just
we
a.
go hunting? Is it like we have a
No,
devotion and go hunting?
I want to. I want to think that it's more like a a men's fellowship kind of thing, and maybe almost a conceal the carry thing, maybe. I'm not completely sure.
Get your CC license and learn about Jesus Christ.
Yes. But I
Because he
just
was packing when he was walking through Galilee. Those Pharisees start throwing stones at him. He goes, I'm going to put a cap in you. I'm going to put a cap in you,
He's like,
Hezekiah.
I ain't dying on the cross today. That's gonna wait for a couple weeks.
You're going to put me on a cross? Tell that to my Uzi.
I don't think it's bad or anything. I just thought it was funny that it's the title more than anything. God and Guns Part Two.
Sounds like a movie that the Kendrick brothers made.
Or a bad movie in the 90s.
Oh yeah. Starring whoever the biggest like Christian person was. So starring Michael W. Smith and Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I was going to say Chuck Norris.
Oh, Chuck Norris and Jean-Claude Van Damme. Or Kevin Sorbo. Oh goodness. All right. Well, let's kind of figure it out. I don't know how to transition out of this.
I think I left Scott speechless.
I'm blown away. There are very few things that surprise me, but there's always that one thing that surprised me. Sometimes I just blow away myself with just the way my mind takes information, processes it, and try to make it into something humorous. So if you got a good laugh from this, from listening to this, friends, thank you so much. But if not, then at least I got a laugh, and that's what's important. So today we're going to talk about church junk, and I want to start this off by my very first pastorship that I had. So I was a bivocational pastor up in the Youngstown area, and we go into the church and we kind of walk around, and everything seemed pretty good. But the one thing we noticed is that the way the church was set up, we had some classrooms that were right when you entered into the sanctuary. You had the sanctuary to your right, you had some classrooms on your left. You kept walking forward, there was kind of like a little like dining area, fellowship hall. Then there was like a bigger fellowship area. But then you had some classrooms kind of in the back. And once you got to that back corridor, there's a couple things that I noticed. First, I noticed there's this big, like two big like console TVs, the tube TVs that had like the wood. Like the wooden frames around them, just sitting there. When I start getting more back into some of the classrooms, there was just random stuff and junk and everything in here. And then the offices, like the secretary's office was on one side of the sanctuary, and the pastor's office was on the other side of the sanctuary. And as we walked into those areas, it was pretty much like, oh, like, there's a lot of junk in this area. So one of the things, and this was kind of a conviction that my wife had, she goes, you know, if this is God's house and we're supposed to be taking care of God's house, then why do we have all this junk laying around? And we just need to kind of get rid of it. So I talked to the elder board. I said, hey, what can we do with this? And, you know, they're an older congregation. They're like, well, you know, the TVs are really heavy. We just don't have anyone strong enough to get them out. So if you can get them out or take them to like a recycling place, you're good. I'm like, okay. So I had my mom, called my mom. She brought her trailer and a dolly, and I was able to move three old console TVs that were sitting in a hallway to put them there. After that, we were able to clean up some rooms. So when we did a vacation Bible school, we actually were able to use a majority of the church instead of just the presentable places because we had so much junk. And sometimes she would ask questions like, oh, what's this from? Or what's that? And they're like, we don't know. We don't know. We don't know why this is here. So in some ways, that was a lot easier to kind of clean up some junk and actually make the church more presentable because there's people who are like, we don't know what this is, and we're going to go and get rid of it. So I know that's just one story, but that kind of sets us up that, you know, sometimes within churches, there's always a place where they just have a lot of like junk or even things that was usable at the time. And now it's just kind of sitting, collecting dust. So kind of the topic is why does churches become like a place that accumulate a bunch of junk, and why do churches not get rid of the junk? So what
Because
are
they're
kind of
sacred
your,
cows.
what do you mean by sacred cows?
Somebody donated it 20 years ago and they can't get rid of it because it's going to make somebody upset.
That's, you know what? I think that's probably the number one reason, especially like your bigger items, when you have like TVs or whatever, those are kind of the big items on why people don't get rid of stuff is because somebody donated it, and not only that someone didn't donate, that someone donated it, but someone donated it and either A, they're still there and you don't want to ask them and say, hey, we really don't want your junk because you moved from your house to like an apartment or to a assisted living facility. Or B, it's more of a, well, we have this junk from somebody, but they've been dead for 20 years and we don't have way to contact family. So is it actually okay to do this or not? And if we do it, are we going to upset people or are we going to upset like friends of that person, say, hey, that was donated by Sister Clarence, and how dare you get rid of that? So I think a lot of times pastors or even church leaders or elder boards don't really want to deal with the mess because they are afraid that they're going to offend someone or get someone upset, and it's going to kind of cause a bunch of unnecessary drama.
Yeah. I don't know where you want to go with this conversation, but like I have several examples of just crazy things that I've seen in churches over the years, and if you wanted to do that and share some of those.
Yeah, go ahead and share some of those, and I can kind of talk because being at a larger church, like a huge church, there is a room that has accumulated a bunch of junk or even stuff that we've had that have accumulated, and kind of what Pastor Colleen has kind of done to kind of navigate
Cleared
that, which
out.
could be which kind of be well, in a way, do it with respectfulness and kind of her theology on dealing with church junk, and I think it might be good. So yeah, go ahead and share some of your stuff.
Some of my junk.
Share some of your junk.
couple of examples come to mind. I think of I think I shared about, so my uncle pastored a church years ago in this community where there were fake plants everywhere, and a friend of mine and his dad were essentially the worship team at this church. It was smaller in nature, and they were these fake trees that were on the platform. And no matter what I did, or whatever Mark did, or no matter what Dave did, we put them away. We put them in a closet. We put them downstairs. Every Sunday we came in, sure enough, they made their self, you know, made their way back to the platform. And one day, or one weekend when we had practice, we put them in the garage on the other side of the parking lot outside of the church building, and they went away for probably 2 or 3 months. And they were like, oh, we finally got rid of the trees. And then sure enough, a couple months later, they made their way back to the platform. And we're like, we just cannot get rid of these trees. They're a sacred cow. That's a whole nother conversation, but like, I don't understand the fake plant things in churches and people's obsession with fake plants. The other example I can think of is that, you know, in addition to fake plants, I was at my dad's church probably 2, 3 years ago, doing an installation of sound equipment, and we were trying to find like an extension cord or an extra XLR cable or something like that. And Alicia went downstairs and she's like, hey, you have to come here. And I'm like, why? She's like, look at this room. And it was a room that was literally filled with fake plants, like flowers and trees. And, you know, it was like a mini Hobby Lobby, right? Like there were so many fake plants. And that was just another one. And then a church I was working at years ago, the worship pastor had left, and I got hired on a part-time basis. And the pastor was like, if you can, you know, go through this space, like we called it the tree house, because it was upstairs, and that's kind of where we kept our live stream equipment. And if you can go through this stuff and sell it and make money off of it, that can be your budget essentially to buy, cameras and a switcher and things like that to make, our live stream better. And I was like, great, let's do that. So we go upstairs to this treehouse, and Scott, there were probably 15 Dell desktop towers. And they weren't even being used. And like I would imagine that they had like Windows XP and Windows, 2000. They were super old. And so this is just a couple of years ago. So like we're talking like a decade and a half just sitting up there collecting dust. So my wife and
Jeez.
I went through and we took all their hard drives out because they a lot of places won't let you recycle them with hard drives in them. And so we took the hard drives out and we recycled the shells. And then found a place where we could destroy the hard drives, so we kept those separate. And then, like some of the stuff that I sold, like there was an old broadcast camera, like from the 90s that you put on your shoulder. I sold that for like $300. It wasn't even being used. They had a Bose speaker system. I made $500 on that. Just had to pay. They had to pay for shipping, and I shipped it to Texas or wherever. There was a security camera system that nobody was using that
Oh
somebody in
my
South Dakota
gosh.
bought. Like there was so much junk up there, but I ended up making like $5,000 off of selling just this random stuff.
Wow.
And they had like a spotlight, from your time in theater and productions and things like that. Like the old school big canned spotlight that would, get super hot and you'd flick the, you know what I'm talking about? The big can spotlight. So they had two of those up there. Honest to God, I don't know how they got up there because literally there's like a little pull down ladder like you would go to an attic that would get up to the space. Like I have no idea how it got up there. So that and then like there was another church I worked at years ago where they didn't have much storage. Like it was a newer building and they built this building, but they didn't keep in mind that they probably need more closet space and places to store things. But like I felt like the pastor was a hoarder. Like every time I turned around, there was just stuff everywhere. And it's like every time I try to get rid of it, it's like, oh, we can't get rid of it. We can't do this. We can't do that. And I'm like, bro, there's nowhere to put things. And it was just everything was so messy. I could keep going if you want.
Oh my gosh. Well, no, I think we kind of get the point. Like, well, and you bring up a good point about hoarding. You bring up a good point because sometimes people don't get rid of stuff because they're hoarding it. When I was in camp ministry, we hoarded everything. And
I'm not shocked.
well, and the problem was is because we never really knew what our budget was going to be.
Right, I was just going to say that.
We never knew what our budget was going to be. So that was always the thing. And especially like when because I served under two directors, Wade and John. So John worked under Wade for many years. So John kind of knew like kind of the ways budget could change and everything else. So when John took over, it was like we're saving everything, we're doing anything. Like when we went and started buying supplies, he would go to like Home Depot or Lowe's and buy like the boards that were warped and like messed up because they were cheaper, and he would just buy like a whole stack of like messed up boards, and we would use that to build our props or our stages or whatnot because we wanted to make sure that we could be do some of the stuff that he envisioned on and be mindful of the budget. So then after things were done, we take everything down, we would put it in storage. And not only did we have it in storage somewhere randomly on the camp, but we also had storage space down in Ohio Ministries basement. And it was just crazy on how much stuff we had, to the point where there'd be times where I had a truck at the time and we'd be loading stuff up or getting ready for camp, and people would be like, "Scott, do we, what is this?" And I'd look at it, I'd go, "I have no idea what the heck this is. I literally do not know what this is." So they would say, like, "Okay, well, what do we do with it? Because obviously we don't need it. Let's throw it out because we're just constantly just pulling stuff out of this basement. And then if we don't have anything for it, it's just going to be go back into the basement. It's going to go somewhere else. It's just going to be more junk." And I said, "Well, I don't know." So We would do it, but then eventually I started to say, okay, here's what we're going to do, because I had a cap on my truck and I could lock it and everything, and it was shaded, so you couldn't really look inside it. I said, here's what we're going to do. We're just going to go ahead and kind of keep that stuff off the side. Let's get the stuff that we need. When we start finishing it up, start loading the stuff that we don't want in the back of my truck. They did. I was always up early. I get up at like 5:30 in the morning every single day. And I would get up and I knew exactly when the trash people were coming. And I would go and I would throw it in the trash receptacle right before the people would come and take the trash away. And that's how I was able to get rid of some junk. Now, fast forward to after I left camp ministry, but I would come back to help out with performing arts camp. Some of these staff members would ask me, hey, how did you always get rid of stuff? I go, what do you mean? They go, because anytime we try to do it, we'll put it in a trash can. And the next thing you know, we'll see John out there in the morning, like pulling stuff out of the trash that we have thrown away. And then he'd get mad at us. And I go, well, that's because you guys don't get up early enough to throw it away right before the trash receptacle guy comes. Oh, so if you are willing to go to bed early and do and then get up early so you can take care of it, then that was the secret. And he's like, oh, they never did. And by that time, you know, the camp kind of closed anyway in those last few years. So I'm not sure. But even after we started having success and our numbers were growing and we were getting a bigger budget, stuff was still being hoarded. I'm like, we don't, I understand, like, if there's stuff that's good and it's definitely usable, let's keep it. But if there's stuff that we don't want, get rid of it. Like, when are we going to use this stuff? Now, fast forward, I was actually talking to John. We're talking about ministry stuff. And I guess some of the stuff that he was hoarding over at camp, when camp closed, he actually made sure he loaded up a trailer and took it to where he was living at. And now he has stuff stored at the place where he's living at and in like storage spaces. So anytime he needs to use it for ministry, when he does his traveling camps, he can pull it out and use it. So he still has some of that stuff. But you know, when I look at kind of in hindsight, when I look about the idea, I think there's kind of two main philosophies, or actually, I wouldn't even say two. I think there's one main philosophy when it comes to how do we deal with church junk. And I think it's like, are you being good stewards of the stuff that you have? And what that means is if you have a church building, you want it to look presentable, the same kind of theology that my wife had. You know, this is God's church. We definitely should make it look presentable. Why do we have a bunch of random junk around here? We need to do something with it. Okay. I also think, you know, being a good steward with the junk that you have, like if it served a purpose, and if it no longer serves a purpose, then you need to do something with it. Whether you sell it because someone else may want it, someone else may want to use it. There might be another church who could use a security system, your old security system that you're not using because you've upgraded yours, and a smaller church may want a security system, so they'll buy yours. Same thing like a vacation Bible school. Like at the end, when every time we do a vacation Bible school, Laura used to have a like almost like a forum that she'd go to, where people are always asking, hey, we need vacation Bible school material. What do you have? It's like, well, here's all the different themes we have. Can we borrow it or can we have it? Yes. And we would ship it off. And sometimes after doing vacation Bible school, Lord would pack up all the stuff, all the props, all the set pieces, and we would send it off, or someone would come pick it up so they could send it off to a missionary out in like Uruguay so that they could do a vacation Bible school. So they're using the stuff that we had. And they're doing it over there. So that was a good way. So instead of just keeping stacks and stacks of vacation Bible school stuff over the years and just trying to do it, like we're like, you know, we're going to pay it forward. We're going to go ahead and send that out. And then like at our church that I'm working at now, we had this old harpsichord that sat in the back right behind where the pastor's pulpit was when she would preach. And it just sat there, collected dust, and no one did anything because it was basically a gift that was bought by a gentleman who did it as a memoriam for his wife who had recently passed. So there's the context. Like, this is something that somebody in the church bought because it was in honor of his dead spouse. The person is still living, is already remarried, but you know, this is kind of a thing that was in honor and memory of here, but it's just sitting there. It's collecting dust. We had one person come by who's interested in it, looked at it, still played. It's just, we just don't use it. We have no need for it. We don't have anyone who could like really play it. So what Pastor Colleen did is she kind of looked around and she was just thinking like, okay, you know, is there anything out there that this could be used for? And she wasn't finding things. So then she went and put it out on the, put it out on like Facebook Marketplace. And sure enough, there's a guy in Cincinnati who saw the post, commented on it, said he'd like to take a look at it. So he drove from Cincinnati with his truck, came up. I think we got like $300 for it. But one of the things that he said is like, what they do is they take these things and they repair them. And then he has a music school for like underprivileged children. And then he teaches them how to play music. So not only with harpsichord, but drums, guitars, he'd take any type of instruments that people are getting rid of and he'll repurpose them so that he could teach kids the gift of music down in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, and so, you know, it was like, okay, so then, you know, she actually got the permission from the gentleman saying, hey, is it okay if we try to find a better place for this since we're not using it? We just don't want to. And again, she explained it like, you know, we want to be good stewards of the stuff we have. Right now it's not being used. We don't have anybody who can play it. And I just don't want this beautiful piece of equipment just to sit here and rot away and get, you know, become basically worthless because it's just been sitting here doing nothing. And he was very much like, yeah, if you can. So then after the guy took it, she went back to him and said, hey, I just want to let you know, here's how much we sold it for. And here's what it's being used for. And actually explained to the ministry that this guy was doing in Cincinnati. And it just made his day knowing that the gift that was in honor of his wife was going to teach kids how to do music because she was also a music teacher herself. So he just thought that that was just such a great coincidence. And I think that as churches and church leaders, when we have that stuff, first of all, if there's no way, if no one knows who donated it or where it came from, or if anybody in the church is actually knows anything about this, it's okay to get rid of it. It's okay to get rid of it. Because at this point, if you're talking with your elder board and no one knows anything about whatever this thing is in your church, get rid of it. The second thing is if you do know somebody who knows what it is and they, or a family member has it, just have a conversation saying, hey, we would like to try to, since we're not using this, we would like to try to give this to somebody to A, use it, be good stewards of it, that they could use it for something better. And B, any money that we get from it can go to help fund like our capital campaign or to replace a hole in our stained glass window or whatever the case may be. Like, I think that's sort of thing can kind of help because it's not just, well, we're going to get money to pay our bills. We're getting money so we can use it for another project or something that we need within the church, like upgrading our streaming stuff. And then I think the third thing is, and you mentioned about fake plants and all that. And I know why churches do fake plants, because it's cheaper and it's more less energy to take care of a fake plant than to get real plants and make sure you're watering them and taking care of them and whatnot. But at the same time, like actually our building manager was going through stuff and he saw like these fake flowers that were falling apart. Some of the foam was breaking up. And he's like, you know, I'm just going to throw these away because right now there's just no way this stuff is usable. There's no way this stuff is usable. And even if we do use it, it's going to not look good. So, you know, they made some calls, they made a decision, and they ended up throwing up a lot of the stuff out. And then anything that was usable, they kept. And then he even contacted the person who's supposed to be doing the church decoration saying, hey, we're throwing out a bunch of stuff. So I'm going to show you. So if you can come by, we're going to show you. Here's all the stuff we're throwing out. So then you can think about what we need to replace it with if you still want to go the fake flower route. But then that way, it's not like you're just collecting all this stuff and you're like, well, I'm not using these because they're just are ugly, but I don't want to throw them away. So we'll just leave them at the church. And then you have like your good flowers and your crappy flowers just kind of all lingering in the space. So overall, I think just being a good steward of the stuff that you guys have and just try to be creative about what you can do with some of the stuff is going to go a long way to, you know, and I think in some cases, and maybe this is just me in my opinion, but I think God would honor if you're actually kind of doing stuff to kind of take care of the church and make it look presentable and not keeping the old baggage in your church. If God doesn't want us to carry our baggage or these heavy yokes on our lives, then why are we keeping this random junk and stuff in our church, just kind of bogging it down? And instead of trying to get some fresh life or get breathe some fresh air to the church by just kind of cleaning it up and get rid of some of this stuff. So that's kind of my 10 cents, maybe a dollar of a thought.
No, I think you're right though. Like, if you think about it like this and through this light, like, you know, 15, 20 years ago, somebody donated money for a piano. Well, we're not using that piano because we're using a keyboard today. So that piano is sitting there, similar to what you just said about the harpsichord, just collecting dust. If you can sell that and make a difference elsewhere, just think like you're still doing ministry. You're just doing like an upgraded version of that. And if that can't, and I always use the phrase that, like, you know, if we're being good stewards of God's money and advancing the kingdom of God in respect to technology or live streaming or, you know, sound and audio equipment, then we would be foolish not to. There's a church I do marketing and social media for now, and I literally do their, I keep their website up to date. I do their YouTube page. I do their, you know, social media, et cetera. They had a beautiful, like, 9-foot Yamaha grand piano, and it was one of my favorites to play. And they sold it for $10,000. And they were able to use that money for worship ministry to upgrade some of the sound and upgrade some of the lighting and upgrade some of the live stream equipment during the pandemic. It really helped enhance what they were doing online. And that would have not happened had they not sold that piano. So yeah, I mean, that church that I mentioned earlier, that pastor was like, if you sell this stuff, that's your budget, and you can use what you need to, you know? So I was able to buy a new camera, and I was able to buy a new switcher. I was able to buy a new MacBook, things like that, so that I could make the live stream ministry, you know, more prevalent in 2018, 2019, going into even the pandemic and beyond. There's just so many different ways that you could enhance, like, I understand too, though. Like, okay, a lot of churches that are older, like building wise, are older. Like, some may have like a pipe organ. Like, you're not going to be able to sell a pipe organ. Like, it's just not going to happen because it was built. Most pipe organs are built within in the church, so they can't be moved, right? So, I mean, there's other things too. Like, when I was selling a lot of that gear, it went to smaller churches that needed it, right? I sold this like small mixer that was like, I don't know, 8 to 10 channels, and this church paid maybe $200 for it, but they didn't have anything. And so, like, it was a blessing to them because they were able to get a soundboard out of it, and it cost them next to nothing. So not only are you blessing and advancing your ministry financially, but you may be blessing other churches, like you were saying earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of the big thing. Like, you have to always think about, you know, as a church, we're always evolving. And there's nothing wrong with honoring the past, but I think the way we can honor the past is just not keeping something as a museum, as a piece that we can just reflect on and just kind of enjoy. I think the thing we can do with the way we can honor the past is by recognizing, hey, this served us at a great time in our church. There's a lot of great memories on it. But here, we're going to go ahead and we're going to sell this. We're going to do this so that we can start to kind of make more future memories for what God is going to do presently and in the future. And I think if you have that mindset and you can kind of, in a way, communicate that to your congregation or to your leadership board, or even to the person who is the one who donated it in the first place 20 some years ago, I think that's always going to go a long way to really get people to be on track with, okay, have a better sense of what it means to be a good steward of the things that we have within the church, but also give you a good mindset of how can we achieve our vision in the church by kind of repurposing old stuff or recycling older stuff that we've had into something new.
Yeah. That's a great thought. And I think a lot of churches could benefit and learn from that lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. So friends, what do you think? Are you somebody who has a lot of junk in your church? Do you have a fake plant room? Do you have a bunch of random TVs and keyboards and computers that are just hanging around? Like, if so, you know, hopefully this episode has helped you. Hopefully this has sparked any ideas. Hopefully this has helped you think about, you know, I'm going to go to my pastor. I'm going to go to my leadership board and say, hey, we need to do something about that. And, you know, if you want to recommend this podcast to them, or this episode to them, you know, be our guest, like have them listen to it so that they can kind of understand kind of where Mike and I's thoughts are when it comes to this topic and how to clear out the junk within your church. But not only that, but I think if you know someone who's a hoarder, maybe this is kind of the thing that can help them kind of break that cycle so that they too can have a good wellness of life and not hoard a bunch of junk and store it in bedrooms and garages and attics and everywhere else. So friends, that's going to be it for us today. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your afternoon, and we'll be back on next week with another episode. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Scott Simmons Podcast. The Scott Simmons Podcast is made possible by support from our listeners. We thank listeners like Patty and Scott, whose support goes to this podcast's continual growth and maintenance. If you want to support this podcast, you can do so in a number of ways. First, feel free to give us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode and share it with your friends. If you'd like to financially support the Scott Simmons Podcast, you can go to the website ko-fi.com/the-scott-simmons-podcast. That website again is ko-fi.com/the-scott-simmons-podcast. Thank you so much for listening.